Joining us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, Bet Smarter, Beat the Books, download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com, is Ben Brown. Ben used to be with PFF. We were aware, we just forgot, that he is now with ESPN Bet. But Ben is a big NFL guy, and he joins us now. It's good to have you back, Ben. Appreciate it. You know, let's just start with the six quarterbacks. Do you have an opinion one way or the other based on the situations and based on the quarterbacks, the six that got taken in the top 12, who should play and who shouldn't? And I guess we can now... It's four, right? Because Penix Jr. and McCarthy are not in this conversation. So let's take Daniels, May, and then Nix, and who am I forgetting right now?
The star, Caleb Williams.
Yeah, Caleb Williams, my fault. I started at number two. Caleb, Jaden, May, and Bo Nix. Who should start based on their readiness and the situation that they're in?
Yeah, I mean, I think at least kind of starting at the top, you know, Williams and Jaden Daniels, I think, you know, obviously going one and two, I think in a lot of ways went to, you know, probably the best situation of the four quarterbacks that we're discussing right now. I think maybe you could make a case for, you know, JJ McCarthy with what he has as far as weapons around him. Obviously, the injury situation with him kind of puts that out the door. But I think Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams should be starting from day one. We've heard that that's true. I think it very much fits. I do think in some ways, you know, especially Caleb, you know, going to the situation with the Chicago Bears, getting that number one overall draft pick to a trade, like it wasn't as bad of a situation that he stepped into that a lot of other number one overall picks, you know, kind of had to deal with. So from that perspective, I just don't think, you know, there's really any benefit in not figuring out what you have with that guy right away. I just think in general, you know, the onus should be on a team to start their quarterback, rookie quarterback right away. I think the downside risk of sitting him, especially for a year, you know, you just don't get to take advantage of that rookie contract type scale. I think even if you look at situations around the league where that has developed further, you know, obviously we're not talking about, you know, sixth and seventh round draft picks right now, but I think in a situation with a guy like Brock Purdy, he's so much more valuable on that rookie deal and having that extended window, although it hasn't resulted in championships for the San Francisco 49ers, has very much kind of like maximized their overall Super Bowl window and has led to them, you know, being in that conversation for a number of years. So I think just in general, finding out what you have in that rookie guy is what teams should be doing. And especially this season, I very much think the Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels situations that they're arriving in makes it kind of a slam dunk for them to start. Now when we start to talk about guys like Drake May, who, you know, very much could be going to maybe like the worst overall offense in football, you know, him starting right away, I think there has to be genuine concerns about his actual development in a situation where he's not going to have a ton of opportunities to play with guys, you know, that are quality type receivers, alpha number one type receivers, and really doesn't have a ton, I would say, around him to really, I would say, lift him up. So I think, you know, Drake May is kind of a question. To me, you know, Bo Nix, I think just in general, the Denver Broncos are in a situation where they have to kind of hit on that quarterback position to get out from what they gave Russell Wilson. In order to do that, they do have to figure out what they have in Bo Nix right away. And I do think, you know, just in general, I do think he has a little bit of a better supporting cast around him in Denver than what Drake May has. So I think from an argument standpoint, I very much get why Drake May should be sitting potentially even half to a full season. And I very much think that the rest of those three guys should be playing and should be playing from week one, in my opinion.
Is the primary reason for your belief that they should be playing the, you know, leveraging that rookie deal and getting to it sooner than later? Because, like, I think back, and correct me if I'm wrong, and Denton, you might know the answer to this. I think Bradford was the last of the non-rookie wage scale number one. It was either him or Stafford. Was it Bradford?
It was Bradford, yeah. He kind of like broke it basically at that point. So then they changed it the next year, basically. Yeah.
So if we didn't have a rookie wage scale, do you think the overall opinion of most in the league would be to sit these quarterbacks and let them, you know, watch for a half of a year or a full season before playing them?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that that is, you know, very much what kind of changed the calculus of the equation. But yeah, I think if it wasn't for the rookie wage enactment, and we were still negotiating these picks, and we were hitting some of these outlandish numbers that we got with, you know, the Sam Bradfords of the world. Like, that is when the discussion changes to, okay, we absolutely have to be correct that this guy is the guy when we're paying him this much money. Let's do everything we can from a development standpoint in order to facilitate that. And I think it still probably is a little bit more of a situation-by-situation basis, but I think there's a lot more opportunities for a guy to get into the right system and learn from a veteran quarterback in year one, and then really be that guy in year two. And I think in some ways that actually probably does help the overall development from a quarterback. But unfortunately, with the direction that we've gone from the salary cap standpoint, rookie wage scale, everything else, like, we have to understand what we have in this guy right away, because the shift is so dramatic going from that rookie deal to a $55 million a year player. And when that happens, the entire framework of your team shifts. And I think that's the reason why starting these guys and getting information right away, and also knowing that, you know, if you do miss on a top end draft pick, it might not be as detrimental as it once was, because you're not paying them quite as much money as you were when you had, you know, Sam Bradford contract.
Yeah, of course. And that was the idea, that along with getting, you know, more money to more of the veteran players. But you know what's interesting, Ben, is, and I don't have it in front of me, but I did this a few years ago. In fact, I did it when Washington drafted Dwayne Haskins, and there was a lot of discussion on whether or not he was ready to play or not. The truth was, he wasn't ready to play. But I went back and looked basically at like 10 years worth of first-round quarterbacks. And the bottom line is, taking Mahomes out of the equation, if you didn't start by week five of your rookie season, it was more likely than not because you weren't very good and you didn't turn out to be very good. The guys that turned out to be good started right from the jump. But the impetus for starting them, and certainly we started to see that after the rookie wage scale was implemented. What are your expectations for Jaden Daniels this year?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I know it's not just, you know, a fantasy discussion, but I think, like, he could be, you know, one of the most productive quarterbacks from a fantasy standpoint with both the rushing and the passing type situation. To me, I am, I would say I'm very much intrigued by the weapons around him. Again, kind of going back to, like, the Caleb Williams versus Jaden Daniels comparison. To me, I think Caleb Williams has a better, you know, obviously receiving unit, but there is some opportunities for, you know, Daniels to kind of figure this out and figure it out quickly. I think, you know, McLaurin, obviously well-established, is kind of just been waiting for that bona fide, you know, I would say quarterback to unlock him. So I think he is, you know, very much in this conversation of a guy that can elevate Jaden Daniels. What they kind of do in the slot has been interesting, I would say, from a preseason standpoint. It does seem like Jahan Dotson is going to be the guy in three receiver sets to move into the slot. I think that does put, you know, a ton of pressure on him developing. I think if you were, you know, to ask, you know, Commanders fans, based on his, you know, performance last season, like, how much should we buy into that? I think he's going to be kind of the key to what they need to do offensively. And if he is good, I think overall the Washington Commanders are at least going to be in the conversation for a playoff spot in the NFC. And I think if you look around the NFC East, you know, there are reasons why we shouldn't buy into the top dogs like the Philadelphia Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys. And for that reason, I think there's, you know, quite a bit of optimism to be played for the Commanders figuring this out in year one with Dan Quinn, new quarterback, new coach, everything kind of hitting right. And I think it very much, you know, outside of Jaden Daniels, is going to be key to how they kind of develop that slot position and then how Cliff Kingsbury kind of unlocks the rest of the offense. But I think they have what it takes offensively, and then, you know, we'll really see, what happens coming up here in a couple of weeks. But I very much think that the expectation should be, you know, the Commanders, should at least be in the thick of it. And if they can win some games down the stretch, could be one of those teams kind of sneaking into the playoffs for sure.
I mean, I kind of feel the same way, and I'm typically, and haven't been for good reason, been very optimistic in recent years, but I'm much more optimistic this year. So I would assume that one of your, you know, a favorite season total bet is Washington over 6.5.
Yeah, I think it's very reasonable. I think even like them to get into the playoffs at like +320 or something is a somewhat intriguing longer shot opportunity. But Like, we've seen, you know, I don't want to always draw the comparison to it, but, like, we've seen a dynamic, you know, quarterback, what he can do, I would say, both rushing the football and throwing it. And I think with what kind of what they've built, you know, along the offensive line, I think it's intriguing. To me, I would kind of like to see, you know, Ben Snott maybe unlocked a little bit more at that slot position if, you know, Jahan Dotson isn't the guy. But to me, I think overall, like, there's a case and a reason to be optimistic about this development. And if you buy into Jaden Daniels, them to go over 6.5 is a good bet. Them to get into the playoffs at, you know, +310, +320, it is also very justifiable if you want a little bit of a longer shot opportunity for sure.
All right, so let's stay in the NFC and in the NFC East in particular. You've, you know, already kind of made reference to Philadelphia and their situation. Who do you like to win the NFC East?
Yeah, I mean, and this is probably, I do think it's probably the most difficult division to handicap for
What's
me right
Washington
now.
Right now to win the division? Like +700, +800, something like that?
Yeah, let me pull it up. I do have it here. I just got to scroll down. Why am I not tuned? Yeah, they're +11. So they're 11-1 right now.
Wow.
The Eagles are, you know, -140 basically. You know, obviously, you know, over 50% opportunity. The Cowboys are +175. You know, people don't buy into, you know, the Cowboys offseason. I think, you know, just to start with the Cowboys, maybe, like, I think there is, and I don't know everyone's going to say it right now, but there is, you know, a pretty clear path to things going off the rails with how they've kind of constructed this team and, you know, what they've done with negotiations with Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb, like how top heavy they kind of have become as well. Like, I think defensively they'll be there, but, you know, offensively, like, one injury could kind of derail this entire season. I know that's, you know, a common refrain for a lot of teams, but it just seems like there's so much chaos happening with Dallas in particular this particular season that there's more of a wider range of outcomes for how potentially poor they could actually be. And I think that's maybe, you know, the discussion point with the NFC East right now. And then, you know, to go to the Philadelphia Eagles, like, you know, I think last year at this time, people, you know, that were kind of front forward looking were, you know, right in the fact that, like, the Eagles were potentially going to struggle in the loss of both of their offensive coordinators and both of their coordinators going to head coaching type positions. And I know they've kind of, you know, readjusted both offensive and defensive coordinator this offseason, but to me, I'm not convinced that they still have the right pieces in place. And I think, you know, what the value is from an offensive defensive coordinator and the quality that they can actually bring, I think it's still maybe a little bit misunderstood. And I think for that reason, you know, we shouldn't expect the Eagles just to be back to where they were two seasons ago after bringing in Kellen Moore, you know, and kind of trying to figure out those sorts of things. So I don't want to say that the Eagles won't end up winning the division. I just think at, you know, over a 50% implied probability right now, I think there's at least a case to be made for them not getting to that sort of expectation here in 2024.
We're talking to Ben Brown from ESPN Bet. You can follow Ben on X on Twitter at Ben_R_Brown_. So let's stay in the NFC overall. Give me the, you know, the things that you feel most strongly about in terms of season totals, whether it's over a total or under a total.
Yeah, it's a good question. I do, I would say, probably still buy into the hype of the Detroit Lions, you know, 10.5 games. I think they're going to end up being probably the class of the NFC when it's all said and done, be the team that represents the NFC in the Super Bowl. So I do like them to go over 10.5, their win total. I think in a lot of ways, if you are looking to bet unders, you know, the AFC is very much the direction to go. I do think there are going to be, you know, just some teams that are going to have, you know, really weird outcomes in the NFC. So I think even a team like the Seattle Seahawks, I know their over 7.5 win total is kind of juiced up a decent amount, but they're a team, Mike McDonald's first season. I like where they have drafted the past couple seasons. I think now is kind of the time where a new coach can potentially put all those pieces in place. You know, what are they going to get from Geno Smith is obviously going to be a question, but I still think they have talent at the wide receiver position. And if you do think, you know, the 49ers in particular are a team that maybe doesn't get to that 11.5 game win total, I think the Seahawks are a pretty strong correlation and a correlated play to kind of go over their number. So
more so than the 49ers, Rams.
Yeah, I guess probably both are a good opportunity. I think maybe, you know, it's a similar proposition for the Seahawks or the Rams, but me, I do like the 49ers to go under. I think there are a number of situations that could go awry. To me, I think Trent Williams is, you know, the most valuable player on that team. He's getting up there in age. I think when he ends up, you know, eventually retiring, that's probably really when that championship window for the 49ers closes. But an injury, you know, in the right situation to them, I think it is gonna lead them astray. And I do think the Seahawks and the Rams in particular, and also the Cardinals, are all going to probably benefit if they're not, you know, living up to that 11.5 game win expectation for sure.
All right, let's go to the AFC. What are your best over under season total bets there?
Yeah, it's I do think I know it's probably fading, you know, popular consensus, but I do think that the what I would classify as like the bottom two teams in the AFC North are going to struggle more than what we'd expect. So the Cleveland Browns to go under 8.5 wins. That's a plus price right now. I think that's pretty decent, you know, spot to get involved in what is going to be a really difficult overall division in a really difficult overall conference. Similar sentiment with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think longer term, we are going to see Justin Fields potentially be the starter for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But for that, in order to happen, we're going to need to see probably more of the same from Russell Wilson. I think if that start is how the season kind of starts off, you know, the Steelers to get over 8.5. It is going to be a really difficult proposition. So I do think the Steelers and the Browns in particular, given where they sit at, you know, given what the quarterback situation is kind of like.
Is that a minus price on the under for them? I would assume it is.
Yeah, it's a pretty heavy minus price. I think it's like minus 140 right now, minus 145 for the Steelers to go under. But yeah, that's an aggressive one. But I do think, you know, even those teams at a decent minus price to miss the playoffs, are also pretty good spots to look at for sure.
If I told you Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, neither one was the MVP this upcoming season, who would it be?
I would definitely go with CJ Stroud. I am buying into the hype. I know they're the most popular team, coming into the regular season from the off season, but I think this is what you do with a guy that you know you've hit on from a rookie wage standpoint and kind of going back to that. And you do go all in, and they have, I would say, you know, kind of unlocked everything to put all the pieces in place, both offensively and defensively. And yes, there is, you know, quite a bit of opportunity for CJ Stroud to regress, especially from, you know, the interception and turnover-worthy play type rate and some more of those, you know, poor passes that he did have last season actually resulting in interceptions. But I think there is still an upside case to be made. And if we aren't talking about Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, I very much think the third best player and the third most likely would be CJ Stroud to win the MVP in that sort of scenario.
Man, that'd be incredible. Year two, second year, rookie, offensive rookie of the year one. That would be Marino-esque, I guess. Probably. Marino won it in the second year or third year? I think it was his second year. Thanks, Ben. Really appreciate it. Good work, and have fun at ESPN.
Thanks, guys. Have a great show, Kevin.
Yep, Ben Brown, everybody, from ESPN Bet. Jeff Ehrman will talk Terps football with us next, and then our friend Sam Monson, who used to be with PFF but is now with the 33rd team, will join us after that. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and theteam980.com. Joining us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, Bet Smarter, Beat the Books, download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com, is Ben Brown. Ben used to be with PFF. We were aware that he is now with ESPN Bet, but Ben is a big NFL guy and he joins us now. It's good to have you back, Ben. Appreciate it. You know, let's just start with the six quarterbacks. Do you have an opinion one way or the other based on the situations and based on the quarterbacks, the six that got taken in the top 12, who should play and who shouldn't? And I guess we can now... It's four, right? Because Penix Jr. and McCarthy are not in this conversation. So let's take Daniels, May, and then Nix, and who am I forgetting right now?
The star, Caleb Williams.
Yeah, Caleb Williams, my fault. I started at number two. Caleb, Jaden, May, and Bo Nix. Who should start based on their readiness and the situation that they're in?
Yeah, I mean, I think... Williams and Jaden Daniels, I think, you know, obviously going 1 and 2, I think in a lot of ways went to, probably the best situation of the four quarterbacks that we're discussing right now. I think maybe you could make a case for, you know, JJ McCarthy with what he has as far as weapons around him. Obviously, the injury situation with him kind of puts that out the door. But I think Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams should be starting from day one. We've heard that that's true. I think it very much fits. I do think in some ways, you know, especially Caleb, going to the situation with the Chicago Bears, getting that number one overall draft pick to a trade, like, it wasn't as bad of a situation that he stepped into that a lot of other number one overall picks, kind of had to deal with. So from that perspective, I just don't think, you know, there's really any benefit in not figuring out what you have with that guy right away. I just think in general, the onus should be on a team to start their rookie quarterback right away. I think the downside risk of sitting him, especially for a year, you just don't get to take advantage of that rookie contract type scale. I think even if you look at situations around the league where that has developed further, you know, obviously we're not talking about, you know, sixth and seventh round draft picks right now, but I think in a situation with a guy like Brock Purdy, he's so much more valuable on that rookie deal, and having that extended window, although it hasn't resulted in championships for the San Francisco 49ers, has very much kind of like maximized their overall Super Bowl window and has led to them, you know, being in that conversation for a number of years. So I think just in general, finding out what you have in that rookie guy is what teams should be doing. And especially this season, I very much think the Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels situations that they're arriving in makes it kind of a slam dunk for them to start. Now when we start to talk about guys like Drake May, who, you know, very much could be going to maybe like the worst overall offense in football, you know, him starting right away, I think there has to be genuine concerns about his actual development in a situation where he's not going to have a ton of opportunities to play with guys, that are quality type receivers, alpha number one type receivers, and really doesn't have a ton, I would say, around him to really, I would say, lift him up. So I think, you know, Drake May is kind of a question. To me, you know, Bo Nix, I think just in general, the Denver Broncos are in a situation where they have to kind of hit on that quarterback position to get out from what they gave Russell Wilson. In order to do that, they do have to figure out what they have in Bo Nix right away. And I do think, you know, just in general, I do think he has a little bit of a better supporting cast around him in Denver than what Drake May has. So I think from an argument standpoint, I very much get why Drake May should be sitting potentially even half to a full season. And I very much think that the rest of those three guys should be playing and should be playing from week one, in my opinion.
Is the primary reason for your belief that they should be playing the, you know, leveraging that rookie deal and getting to it sooner than later? Because, like, I think back, and correct me if I'm wrong, and Denton, you might know the answer to this. I think Bradford was the last of the non-rookie wage scale number one. It was either him or Stafford. Was it Bradford?
It was Bradford, yeah. He kind of like broke it basically at that point. So then they changed it the next year, basically. Yeah.
So if we didn't have a rookie wage scale, do you think the overall opinion of most in the league would be to sit these quarterbacks and let them, you know, watch for a half of a year or a full season before playing them?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that that is, you know, very much what kind of changed the calculus of the equation. But yeah, I think if it wasn't for the rookie wage enactment and we were still negotiating these picks and we were hitting some of these outlandish numbers that we got with, you know, the Sam Bradfords of the world, like that is when the discussion changes to, okay, we absolutely have to be correct that this guy is the guy when we're paying him this much money. Let's do everything we can from a development standpoint in order to facilitate that. And I think it still probably is a little bit more of a situation by situation basis, but I think there's a lot more opportunities for a guy to get into the right system and learn from a veteran quarterback in year one, and then really be that guy in year two. And I think in some ways that actually probably does help the overall development from a quarterback. But unfortunately, with the direction that we've gone from the salary cap standpoint, rookie wage scale, everything else, like, we have to understand what we have in this guy right away, because the shift is so dramatic going from that rookie deal to a $55 million a year player. And when that happens, the entire framework of your team shifts. And I think that's the reason why starting these guys and getting information right away. And also knowing that, you know, if you do miss on a top end draft pick, it might not be as detrimental as it once was. Because you're not paying them quite as much money as you were when you had, you know, Sam Bradford contract.
Yeah, of course. And that was the idea, that along with getting, you know, more money to more of the veteran players. But you know what's interesting, Ben, is, and I don't have it in front of me, but I did this a few years ago. In fact, I did it when Washington drafted Dwayne Haskins, and there was a lot of discussion on whether or not he was ready to play or not. The truth was he wasn't ready to play. But I went back and looked basically at like 10 years worth of first-round quarterbacks. And the bottom line is, taking Mahomes out of the equation, if you didn't start by week five of your rookie season, it was more likely than not because you weren't very good and you didn't turn out to be very good. The guys that turned out to be good started right from the jump. But the impetus for starting them, and certainly we started to see that after the rookie wage scale was implemented. What are your expectations for Jaden Daniels this year?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I know it's not just, you know, a fantasy discussion, but I think like he could be, you know, one of the most productive quarterbacks from a fantasy standpoint with both the rushing and the passing type situation. To me, I am, I would say I'm very much intrigued by the weapons around him. Again, kind of going back to like the Caleb Williams versus Jaden Daniels comparison. To me, I think Caleb Williams has a better, you know, obviously receiving unit, but there is some opportunities for, you know, Daniels to kind of figure this out and figure it out quickly. I think, you know, McLaurin, obviously well-established, is kind of just been waiting for that bona fide, you know, I would say quarterback to unlock him. So I think he is, you know, very much in this conversation of a guy that can elevate Jaden Daniels. You know, what they kind of do in the slot has been interesting, I would say, from a preseason standpoint. It does seem like Jahan Dotson is going to be the guy in three receiver sets to move into the slot. I think that does put, you know, a ton of pressure on him developing. I think if you were, you know, to ask, you know, Commanders fans, based on his, you know, performance last season, like how much should we buy into that? I think he's going to be kind of the key to what they need to do offensively. And if he is good, I think overall the Washington Commanders are at least going to be in the conversation for a playoff spot in the NFC. And I think if you look around the NFC East, you know, there are reasons why we shouldn't buy into the top dogs like the Philadelphia Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys. And for that reason, I think there's, you know, quite a bit of optimism to be played for the Commanders figuring this out in year one with Dan Quinn, new quarterback, new coach, everything kind of hitting right. And I think it very much, you know, outside of Jaden Daniels, is going to be key to how they kind of develop that slot position and then how Cliff Kingsbury kind of unlocks the rest of the offense. But I think they have what it takes offensively, and then, you know, we'll really see, you know, what happens coming up here in a couple of weeks. But I very much think that the expectation should be, you know, the Commanders, you know, should at least be in the thick of it. And if they can win some games down the stretch, could be one of those teams kind of sneaking into the playoffs for sure.
I mean, I kind of feel the same way, and I'm typically, and haven't been for good reason, been very optimistic in recent years, but I'm much more optimistic this year. So I would assume that one of your, you know, a favorite season total bet is Washington over 6.5.
Yeah, I think it's very reasonable. I think even like them to get into the playoffs at like +320 or something is a, you know, a somewhat intriguing longer shot opportunity. But like we've seen, you know, I don't want to always draw the comparison to it, but like we've seen a dynamic, you know, quarterback, what he can do, I would say, both rushing the football and throwing it. And I think with what kind of what they've built, you know, along the offensive line, I think it's intriguing. To me, I would kind of like to see, you know, Ben Snott maybe unlocked a little bit more at that slot position if, you know, Jahan Dotson isn't the guy. But to me, I think overall, like, there's a case and a reason to be optimistic about this development. And if you buy into Jaden Daniels, them to go over 6.5 is a good bet. Them to get into the playoffs at, you know, +310, +320, it is also very justifiable if you want a little bit of a longer shot opportunity for sure.
All right, so let's stay in the NFC and in the NFC East in particular. You've, you know, already kind of made reference to Philadelphia and their situation. Who do you like to win the NFC East?
Yeah, I mean, And this is probably, I do think it's probably the most difficult division to handicap for
What's
me right
Washington
now.
Right now to win the division? Like plus 700, plus 800, something like that?
Yeah, let me pull it up. I do have it here. I just got to scroll down. Why am I not tuned? Yeah, they're plus 11. So they're 11 to 1 right now.
Wow.
The Eagles are, you know, minus 140 basically. You know, obviously, you know, over 50% opportunity. The Cowboys are plus 175. You know, people don't buy into, you know, the Cowboys offseason. I think, you know, just to start with the Cowboys, maybe, like, I think there is, and I don't know everyone's going to say it right now, but there is, you know, a pretty clear path to things going off the rails with how they've kind of constructed this team and, you know, what they've done with negotiations with Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb, like how top heavy they kind of have become as well. Like, I think defensively they'll be there, but, you know, offensively, like one injury could kind of derail this entire season. And I know that's, you know, a common refrain for a lot of teams, but it just seems like there's so much chaos happening with Dallas in particular this particular season that there's more of a wider range of outcomes for how potentially poor they could actually be. And I think that's maybe, you know, the discussion point with the NFC East right now. And then, you know, to go to the Philadelphia Eagles, like, you know, I think last year at this time, people, you know, that were kind of front forward looking were, you know, right in the fact that, like, the Eagles were potentially going to struggle in the loss of both of their offensive coordinators and both of their coordinators going to head coaching type positions. And I know they've kind of, you know, readjusted both offensive and defensive coordinator this offseason, but to me, I'm not convinced that they still have the right pieces in place. And I think, you know, what the value is from an offensive defensive coordinator, the quality that they can actually bring, I think it's still maybe a little bit misunderstood. And I think for that reason, you know, we shouldn't expect the Eagles just to be back to where they were two seasons ago after bringing in Kellen Moore, you know, and kind of trying to figure out those sorts of things. So I don't want to say that the Eagles won't end up winning the division. I just think at, you know, over a 50% implied probability right now, I think there's at least a case to be made for them not getting to that sort of expectation here in 2024.
We're talking to Ben Brown from ESPN Bet. You can follow Ben on X on Twitter at Ben_R_Brown_. So let's stay in the NFC overall. Give me the, you know, the things that you feel most strongly about in terms of season totals, whether it's over a total or under a total.
Yeah, it's a good question. I do, I would say, probably still buy into the hype of the Detroit Lions, you know, 10 and a half games. I think they're going to end up being probably the class of the NFC when it's all said and done, be the team that represents the NFC in the Super Bowl. So I do like them to go over 10 and a half. Their win total, I think in a lot of ways, if you are looking to bet unders, you know, the AFC is very much the direction to go. I do think there are going to be, you know, just some teams that are going to have, you know, really weird outcomes in the NFC. So I think even a team like the Seattle Seahawks, I know their over 7.5 win total is kind of juiced up a decent amount, but they're a team, Mike McDonald's first season. I like where they have drafted at the past couple seasons. I think now is kind of the time where a new coach can potentially put all those pieces in place. You know, what are they going to get from Geno Smith is obviously going to be a question, but I still think they have talent at the wide receiver position. And if you do think, you know, the 49ers in particular are a team that maybe doesn't get to that 11.5 game win total, I think the Seahawks are a pretty strong correlation and a correlated play to kind of go over their number. So
more so than the
49ers,
Rams.
Yeah, I guess probably both are a good opportunity. I think maybe, you know, it's a similar proposition for the Seahawks or the Rams, but me, I do like the 49ers to go under. I think there are a number of situations that could go awry. To me, I think Trent Williams is, you know, the most valuable player on that team. He's getting up there in age. I think when he ends up, you know, eventually retiring, that's probably really when that championship window for the 49ers closes. But an injury, you know, in the right situation to them, I think it is gonna lead them astray. And I do think the Seahawks and the Rams in particular, and also the Cardinals, are all going to probably benefit if they're not, you know, living up to that 11.5 game win expectation for sure.
All right, let's go to the AFC. What are your best over under season total bets there?
Yeah, it's I do think I know it's probably fading, you know, popular consensus, but I do think that the what I would classify as like the bottom two teams in the AFC North are going to struggle more than what we'd expect. So the Cleveland Browns to go under 8.5 wins, that's a plus price right now. I think that's pretty decent, you know, spot to get involved in what is going to be a really difficult overall division in a really difficult overall conference. Similar sentiment with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think longer term, we are going to see Justin Fields potentially be the starter for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But for that, in order to happen, we're going to need to see probably more of the same from Russell Wilson. I think if that start is how the season kind of starts off, you know, the Steelers to get over 8.5 it is going to be a really difficult proposition. So I do think the Steelers and the Browns in particular, given where they sit at, you know, given what the quarterback situation is kind of like.
Is that a minus price on the under for them? I would assume it is.
Yeah, it's a pretty heavy minus price. I think it's like minus 140 right now, minus 145 for the Steelers to go under. But yeah, that's an aggressive one. But I do think, you know, even those teams at a decent minus price to miss the playoffs are also pretty good spots to look at for sure.
If I told you Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, neither one was the MVP this upcoming season, who would it be?
I would definitely go with CJ Stroud. I am buying into the hype. I know they're the most popular team, you know, coming into the regular season from the off season. But I think this is what you do with a guy that you know you've hit on from a rookie wage standpoint, and kind of going back to that. And you do go all in, and they have, I would say, you know, kind of unlocked everything to put all the pieces in place, both offensively and defensively. And yes, there is, you know, quite a bit of opportunity for CJ Stroud to regress, especially from, you know, the interception and turnover-worthy play type rate and some more of those, you know, poor passes that he did have last season actually resulting in interceptions. But I think there is still an upside case to be made. And if we aren't talking about Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, I very much think the third best player and the third most likely would be CJ Stroud to win the MVP in that sort of scenario.
Man, that'd be incredible. Year two, second year rookie, offensive rookie of the year one. That would be Marino-esque, I guess. Probably. Marino won it in the second year or third year? I think it was his second year. Thanks, Ben. Really appreciate it. Good work, and have fun at ESPN.
Thanks, guys. Have a great show, Kevin.
Yep, Ben Brown, everybody, from ESPN Bet. Jeff Ehrman will talk Terps football with us next, and then our friend Sam Monson, who used to be with PFF but is now with the 33rd team, will join us after that. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.